Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a bit of a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world, and it just got a lot more interesting with the election of President Barack Obama to a second term, and few people understand politics or certainly explain to the rest of us what to make of politics better than our first guest, and we are very privileged to have her with us because she's much in demand, as one can imagine. She is Kellyanne Conway. She is the founder and president of a highly respected opinion research group known as The Polling Company. And Kellyanne, thank you for taking a few minutes to explain to us what happened in the election yesterday. Give us a read as to the dynamics of the race as you understand them from the demographics and the other forces at work, and particularly what we should make of them going forward.
Well, Frank, thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners. I think there are a few big takeaways from last night. First of all, is that voters really respond to contrast. And although Governor Romney was a far more conservative candidate than perhaps he had been in the past, He really didn't punch through in such a way that allowed people to understand what would be significantly different in the world around the globe if he were president. He did that here and there on the Middle East, a little bit on the Arab Spring, certainly with respect to Iran and its growing nuclear capability. But I thought he missed a tremendous opportunity on Benghazi, which really is the open mystery, the open question that so many Americans want answered. And sadly, it's almost like Hurricane Sandy upended the discussion and the investigation on Benghazi, and it allowed the president really to escape responsibility. I suppose now we'll learn the truth, we hope. So there's that. The second thing is that the economy itself, although it's the number one issue, jobs are number two, ironically, Frank, that was not enough to either allow Governor Romney to win or to deny Barack Obama a second term. No question, economy was top of mind to voters yesterday. But if all that gets Governor Romney is 41-42% of the vote, and it actually brings Barack Obama down to about 43-44% of the vote, the question then remains, well, what other issues do voters want to hear about? What are they going to base their votes upon? And there you see a combination of moral issues like abortion and marriage, and you see, of course, defense, foreign policy issues, education, immigration. Those were not talked about very much by either candidate in the general election sense. So there's that. And the other thing is that incumbents have tremendous advantages. And I believe the Obama campaign in Chicago really leveraged that very well early on to try to keep together their coalition from 2008, to get them excited, but also to make sure that they turned out early. So early voting was a big key. Some people had already cast their ballots before President Obama's disastrous first debate performance on October 3rd, and that mattered. But let me just tell you something, Frank. As you know, my first job in polling was with the late, great Richard Wirthland, pollster to President Reagan. And I can tell you, when I started there in 1988, you can draw a straight line between presidential approval, right direction, wrong track, and the state of the economy. You can no longer do that. Democrat Jimmy Carter, Republican George Herbert Walker Bush, both were thrown overboard because voters felt that they were not responsible stewards of the financial situation of the economy. That no longer is such a simple construct, because now people say, well, hold on, if I throw the captain over the board, who's the new captain? Is this captain really trying hard? Is Bill Clinton right? Should we get four more years? They're afraid. You know, will we drown too? People are very afraid because there are all these random acts of terrorism and weather patterns and illnesses. So they say, I'm not going to invite more uncertainty in a life that already has too much of it. And I think that benefited the incumbent.
Kellyanne Conway, you have laid a full menu here for us to delve into a little bit more. Let me go back to something you said early on. It sounded, and I want to make sure I'm correct about this, it sounded as though Mitt Romney failed to establish a contrast, particularly in a way that would have appealed to some of the key blocks that President Obama did rather well with. Women, security moms among them, particularly Latinos, what used to be called Reagan Democrats. I think they're still out there now in some number. But is it your judgment that by focusing exclusively, really, on the economy, allowing Benghazi, for example, and the Middle East more generally to go by the board, and not appealing in a very starkly contrasting way to those kinds of voters, that Mitt Romney really, in a way, threw it away?
Well, in some regard, I think that's right, particularly if you look at the swing states that ended up being close, frank but no cigar. And the difference in the female vote in some of these places literally would have literally spelled the difference between victory and defeat. And guess what? Guess what the driving issue to these women was not. It was not abortion and contraception. It was not the so-called concocted phony war on women. 5% of voters in our post-election survey said abortion was the most important issue to them. And among them, 61% voted for Romney, 39% voted for Obama. So, you know, your pro-life position on abortion was still a net positive. It doesn't mean people didn't care about those issues, don't talk about them, but they just weren't vote motivators. And I think that the fear about, you know, getting it wrong on, quote, so-called women's issues completely obscured the fact that national security and terror is a women's issue. That, you know, the cost of Obamacare is a women's issue. Have you ever heard anybody talk about men's issues? I've never heard this phrase in my life. So why the Republican Party believes it should give in to the false language of, quote, women's issues? All issues are everybody's issues. I think that was a real miscue in trying to maybe play a prevent defense on those types of matters. You mentioned Reagan Democrats. You know, it's very important, Frank, to note that if what was Reagan Democrats then became blue-collar workers and now are referred to as white working class voters. Why? Because President Obama does so well among minorities across the board that it's important to have the race component in there with respect to working class voters. Now, these households went for Republicans by 10 points in 2008, and they turned around and went by 30 points in 2010. And they favored Romney last night overall, but not enough in these swing states to make a difference. The 47% tape certainly hurt him. But I think more importantly, it's recognizing that for these folks, the jobs aren't coming back. And so you need to show them the alternative, not just I can create jobs, but what kind? Because these are the guys who are in construction and manufacturing. These are the gals who are in retail. And they're non-college educated, white households, usually both people working, intact marriage, children in the home. Why not talk about the war on coal? Why not talk about hydraulic fracturing, you know, energy independence? And I believe if Governor Romney had had that kind of plan going into the last week's weather disasters and whatnot, he would have had a twofer. He would have been able to talk about energy as a national security issue, why be dependent on these foreign powers, and a made-in-the-USA issue. Everybody complains nothing's made in the USA anymore. Oil and gas are made right here under our feet and off our shores. Frank.
Could be yeah. if we have the wit to exploit them. And you mentioned fracking as an example of something that I think the Obama administration is going to actually make harder for us to do. Kellyanne, in the remaining couple of minutes, again, our guest is Kellyanne Conway of the Polling Company. She is the author of What Women Really Want and an expert not only on that question, but more generally, what's going on in the heads of American voters. What role, looking forward, I'm not interested simply in understanding, you know, what happened last night, but looking forward, would you be counseling the people who listen as we do intently to your advice, Kellyanne, about positioning themselves on these women issues, on issues involving Latinos, on issues involving those white working class Reagan Democrats, so as to maintain a brand that is both appealing and distinctive?
Well, that's right. And that's really what brand loyalty is among consumers, isn't it? And voters are no different. Voters are consumers who are thinking about politics. And to build up that kind of brand distinction and loyalty among them, I think you've got to understand that the twin pillars that motivate them are affordability and security. And so affordability, of course, is that these Reagan Democrats and working class voters, they believe that life in America is increasingly unaffordable. So I think in Washington, people like to tackle it in terms of regulation, taxation, and stimulus and debt, that's fine, Frank. There's no question debt is a four-letter word to voters. But the fact is, if you take it from an affordability perspective, because although Romney had a good jobs message, there are tens of millions of households in this country right now where they have a job. In fact, they may have two jobs. They're actually not in fear of losing the job, and they're not in fear of replacing a lost job. But they don't think the job is enough anymore. That's what's different, because life is increasingly unaffordable. You get pinched at the gas pump. You get the taxes are high. The fees are high. The cost of living is high. This recession is not about Americans, not about these working class voters, Frank, trying to go to Europe for a family vacation or trying to buy that third car or a private school tuition. It's about affording everyday consumables like food and fuel. So the affordability and the security, the idea that if you pay your dues, keep your job, play by the rules, you can have a secure future, that you have some control over your own destiny.
This hurricane season, coastal residents in the southeast and the Gulf states are urged to prepare for the uncertain conditions they may encounter in the aftermath of a major storm and make their annual contingency plans. In addition to other emergency essentials, the American Red Cross and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security recommend residents keep a diversified emergency wallet that includes cash and traveler's checks. American Express traveler's checks provide an extra measure of financial safety and security. Keeping traveler's checks and a supply of cash in small bills offers storm victims payment options to make necessary purchases. Traveler's checks never expire, providing a secure payment method whenever emergencies occur, this year and in the future. Unlike cash, they're refundable if lost or stolen. American Express traveler's checks are available at banks, credit unions, and American Express Travel Service locations across the Gulf Coast and Southeast regions. For more information, please visit www.americanexpress.com/travelerschecks.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by a legend in our time, David Horowitz, a man formerly of the left, now a leader of the right. He is the president of an organization known appropriately as the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He contributes massively to the war for the free world, and most recently has done so with a new and marvelous book, Radicals, Portraits of a Destructive Passion. And for reasons we will be exploring with you, David, this couldn't be more timely, perhaps more depressing, but nonetheless timely. Give us, if you would, quickly the essence of your thesis about this destructive passion and the people who are now much in evidence promoting it.
And yes, and there'll be more of them as America becomes more secular. The utopian passion, which has caused the deaths of over 100 million people, pretty much in our lifetimes and in peacetime, unlike is that utopian passion is the desire for a perfect world, or for a world of social justice, where everybody's equal and everybody gets along, and there's no war, and there's no racism, and no sexism, and no homophobia, and so forth. The achievement of such a world is beyond human capabilities. And the reason is that society is not the problem, as people who are of this persuasion, radicals, progressives, liberals, they're different degrees of the same creature. They don't understand. They think that society is the cause of our problems when we are the cause of our problems. Society merely reflects people. If politicians didn't lie, maybe they could rearrange the world in a satisfying way. It's just one small example. Anybody who's thought about history understands that governments have been responsible. You know, our government was responsible for slavery, for crying out to you, the worst atrocities. So you can't expect government to produce the perfect world. What it produces is a lot of power for individuals who are greedy, self-absorbed, malicious intentions often, and lie frequently, as we have witnessed in this recent presidential campaign.
Yeah, I want to come to that in a moment. But before we do that, David, before we get to the presidential campaign, I want to introduce one of the cast of characters that you describe in a very compelling way, I must say, a fellow by the name of Saul Alinsky. Tell us who he was and what role he has had in the radical movement here.
This book, Radicals, is a series of portraits of radicals, but it's designed to illuminate the mentality of progressives, which conservatives have not fully grasped quite yet. You have to have been a former radical to really appreciate who these people are. Alinsky wrote a little book called Rules for Radicals, and he created some organizations, of which ACORN is one of the flowers. And Barack Obama is prize pupil, although Obama never knew Alinsky personally, but he was trained in Alinsky institutions. And Alinsky's book is perfect. He has a book about for people who want to make the world a better place, and it's dedicated to Lucifer, the devil himself, as the first rebel. And the advice in Alinsky's book, he's a mentor also to Hillary Clinton, who wrote her college thesis on Alinsky.
Admiringly.
Of course, admiringly, I consider him one of the great figures of American history. His advice is, first of all, lie. Don't telegraph your agendas, because people will reject them. He was very critical of 60s radicals, because they said what they were about. We want revolution and we want it now. And that was a healthy thing, actually, about 60s radicals, probably the only one, in that they let people know what their intentions were. And people said, no, but we don't want that.
Yeah. You describe David Horowitz in this this chapter about Saul Alinsky in your new book, Radicals, Portraits of a Destructive Passion, entitled A Radical Machiavelli. The commitment that he had to power, it was all about power. Revolution was about power.
Well, of course, you can't change the world if you don't have power. And so everything was about getting power. And that, if you want to understand Obama's first administration, it's getting money to his troops. And his troops returned the favor by turning out voters. And Republicans did not have the voters to match them. The reason that Romney lost the election is that fewer conservatives and Republicans voted for Romney than voted for McCain. That is a tragedy. But that is why we lost. And I think part of the conservatives don't want to be in this battle. They want to get along with their individual lives. They don't live for politics. They despise politics.
Well, let's talk about
Romney was a very flawed candidate. The Republican Party doesn't take this battle seriously in the way that the left does.
Yeah, David, just talk quickly if you could. We're going to run out of time, and I want to make sure we cover two other points. What is it that is the agenda for Barack Obama, a mentee, if you will, of Saul Alinsky? What should we be expecting in the next 4 years from a man who is imbued with these radical notions?
Well, his agenda, I mean, Alinsky advised, you know, do what's possible, not your ideal. Make compromises, which Obama has done, and he's turned off some of the left because of it. So he's going to, first of all, continue to fund the left with taxpayer money. That's a given. That's where the stimulus money went. It went to the union. He's going to fund the union. He's going to pursue probably this other chimera of the left, the climate change, because it means control over energy policies. They actually want to control when you turn on your light switch. They want to tax you for the energy that you use. And I have to tell you that this is the biggest threat is the environmental movement. And that's the powerful movement because it needs control over everybody's life. They won the Obamacare.
Yeah. Including
your
energy.
Now they're
going to
control
your
environment.
Yeah. And energy as well. David, quickly, we've only got a minute left. What would you recommend to the loyal opposition as to what it should be doing to contend with this radical and his agenda for
the
next 4 years?
Of course, read my book. I mean, look, the big problem here is not conservatives understand the policy issues very well. Their wants, like Paul Ryan. Romney, by the way, probably could have won this election if he had made Rubio his vice presidential candidate, much as I admire Paul Ryan. It was Rubio who we should have picked for the politics of it. But the main thing is you have to understand your enemy. It's not good enough to do the policy. People never get to hear the policies. Romney never appeared for half the electorate. What appeared was all those negative campaign ads, and that's just what politics is about. So you have to understand how vicious, how dedicated and vicious your opponents are. Stop calling them liberals. And hopefully some people will read my book, because my book is portraits of these people so that you understand who they are.
Right. One of the things that just jumps off of the pages is something that we saw play out right out of Saul Alinsky's playbook. I think it was Rules for Radical number 11, in which he said, select a target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. And if that wasn't the script for taking down Mitt Romney, I don't know what was.
Character assassination is the middle name of every Democratic political operative. And everybody who's a conservative knows it. We've all been victims of it. It's not a secret. Everybody said this will be the dirtiest campaign ever, and that Obama has nothing to run on. He has to demonize Romney. And when he did that, did the Romney campaign respond? No. What is wrong with Republicans that they don't understand that this is a war?
They have to read your book. That's for sure.
For keeps.
Yeah.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Well, it's over. Congratulations go to Barack Obama, who won re-election and the presidency for 4 more years. Now he must bind up the wounds inflicted on the nation during this protracted campaign. That necessary and desirable goal will unfortunately be made more difficult by the way Mr. Obama campaigned. He mobilized his partisans, but bitterly divided the country with the politics of envy, grievance, and entitlement. This was most evident in the Democrats' vicious but highly effective personal attacks on Mitt Romney. The approach was right out of the playbook of Mr. Obama's mentor, Saul Alinsky, a self-described revolutionary who called for freezing, personalizing, and polarizing an adversary. A test of whether Mr. Obama now will truly lead one nation will be whether he continues to apply or jettisons Alinsky's rules for radicals. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedomradio.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're joined, as we often are, by our friend Jim Hansen, a former Green Beret special operator in the United States Army, a man with considerable experience, but the hardest kind, with fighting the war for the free world. He is a man who we turn to get particularly a boots-on-the-ground perspective on these issues. And, Jim, I'd like to get your reading on what it is likely to mean for those of your comrades still serving in the United States military that we are going to have 4 more years of Barack Obama presidency.
Yeah, you know, I got most of the tears wiped away. You know, I got the crying done, the wailing. The
got that out of your system, did you?
Yeah, I did. You know, and had a cup of coffee and decided, okay, you know, we did this before. We did Clinton. We lived through that. It was painful. Obviously, I think Barack Obama is a bigger nightmare for the military and the country than Bill Clinton. But we will survive. I think the problems are going to be extreme. And I think a couple of them that are worthy of notice are the fact that we right now have sequestration as an almost certainty with a half a trillion dollar cut to the military budgets, and the effect that's going to have on a military recovering from a decade plus of war and trying to rearm for what is likely to be upcoming conflicts in the Middle East is a tragic thought. So not particularly optimistic, Frank. Is that kind of the status quo for everybody today?
Yeah. Well, I'm getting a lot of that, yes, to be perfectly honest with you. But I wanted particularly to get your take on the fact that the military, by many outside measures at least, for example, the 500 former general officers and flag officers who endorsed Mitt Romney versus what I recall was something like five, admittedly, including Colin Powell, but five who endorsed Barack Obama. Do you think that that actually reflects the level of apprehension inside the military about the, you know, continuation of the policies that, as you say, are going to have such dire impacts on the kind of kit that our troops have and the leadership that may be provided by their commander in chief?
I think both of those are perfectly accurate. Number one, the damage to our defense industrial base and the military's ability to have the gear and funding necessary to accomplish its missions is not just uncertain, it's certain to not be there. And I think more importantly, the second point, the leadership or lack thereof provided by Commander-in-Chief Obama is going to get people killed. It already has. Frank, when he campaigned 4 years ago, he promised to surge into Afghanistan and basically take care of the good war. Yeah, well, no, he didn't. What he did was send enough troops with an expiration date to cover his campaign promise and then get a bunch of good people killed to make sure he couldn't be called weak on foreign policy. Now we have a war that is essentially lost. We'll be continuing to pull out. Nothing good will come of it. And we've got a ton of conflicts looming as a result of the Arab Spring and the fact that he's done nothing about the Iranian program. And all of that's about to blow up with a military that won't have the equipment, the leadership, and the ability to handle any of it. So I'm actually down at Fort Bliss and talked to a bunch of people this morning, and the mood is somber.
Yeah. Well, I can understand it. And part of why we do this program, Jim Hansen, and why we're always so grateful to you for spending a little time with us is to make sure that the public is actually mindful of both these realities and how they are affecting those who are going into harm's way to protect the rest of us. Jim, just to come back to something you touched on a moment ago, the industrial base, I saw in the very, very end of the campaign, Lockheed Martin did let it out, as I recall, that something on the order of 123,000 people were likely to lose their jobs. That seems like a staggeringly high number for a single company, and maybe it's reflecting a you know, a larger community. But to the extent that the defense companies were essentially urged by the Obama administration not to provide notice, formal notice to that effect, to those workers whose jobs may be terminated by this so-called sequestration round of cuts in January. Does this simply aggravate further the sense of a lack of confidence in the leadership that we're getting and bode ill for the future?
Absolutely. I mean, how could it not? It was amazing to watch a Democratic president who is nothing if not, you know, lovable to his constituents, crush a law that was designed to protect laborers from management in order to protect his own electoral chances by having his executive agencies tell all these defense contractors not to tell their workers they're going to be laid off. I mean, that was atrocious, but it's another one of those examples of it's all about Obama taking care of Obama and everybody else falls by the wayside. And I think the idea that the people who had good jobs in the defense industry can certainly count on those going by the wayside as well is demoralizing. And it's not, you know, as big a deal, I guess, if the civilian workforce is demoralized, but it has an effect, and it has an effect on the country as a whole. You're losing good jobs, and they're going to go to unproductive places. So it's tough to have a positive attitude about it, and it's tough to look at the challenges faced by the military and see us and them being able to handle them.
Yeah. Look, if it just goes to unproductive places, that would be one thing. I'm concerned, Jim Henson, that some of these folks are simply not going to be employable, certainly not with the kinds of skills and at the pay rates that they have been enjoying, because they are vital to our national security capabilities. Worrying indeed. Jim, I think we need to have a visit quickly before we let you go about one other, set of bills that's likely to come due during the next 4 years, namely the evidence that President Obama not only issued a classified finding, as they call them, order in effect, back earlier this year, authorizing humanitarian assistance to the so-called Syrian rebels, but it appears from now multiple reports that the assistance also includes arms, perhaps among them surface-to-air missiles. And I just wondered what we know about the Syrian opposition is that it includes some very radical Islamists, including members of al-Qaeda, or certainly people who share their agenda. As a former special operator, as a guy who, you know, had to work with some unsavory sorts, what do you make of this particular directive, and what consequences do you think it might have for our security, if it's allowed to persist particularly?
Well, how'd that go for us in Libya? You want a direct example? Okay, yeah, Gaddafi's dead. The Islamists are firmly entrenched in what passes for a government there. And the very people who that government provided to secure our embassy turned against us and killed our ambassador. I don't see things going one lick better in Syria following the exact same strategy. So, no, he fundamentally misunderstands our enemy and seems to think that there it is possible to make friends with people who whose stated goal is destroying our way of life. It's a mistake, and at some point we have to recognize that. I think it's going to be 4 years down the road, unfortunately, and we're going to reap the consequences of that as he continues to make bad decisions.
Jim Henson, do you have any doubt that these folks are sworn to our destruction? Is there something we're missing when we're told that these Islamists are people that we can do business with?
No. I mean, can we go back farther than Libya and look at Afghanistan? Who the hell are our friends over there? Our mistake in Afghanistan was thinking we had allies. We don't. We have people who occasionally would stop acting directly against us, but strategically have never once shared anything close to an alliance with us. And I think the sooner we recognize that, the sooner we'll undertake strategies that have a chance in hell of winning.
Yeah. Jim Henson, thank you, as always, bracing and perhaps unwelcome as these insights are. I deeply appreciate them and know that you're speaking for a lot of your former comrades in uniform when you pass along the real apprehensions that I think you so rightly have.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Do you see that doggy in the shelter?
Hi, I'm Buddy, the adorable puppy you adopted from the Humane Society.
Meow. I'm Whiskers, a fluffy kitty, just waiting for someone to love me.
When you adopt a pet, we hope your new furry friend will become a cherished member of your family. And as Buddy and Whiskers will tell you, the key to success is following the rules to love by.
Woof, that's right. Please give me food, water, and exercise every day. To stay healthy, I need the same kind of things you need.
Talk to me. I like hearing your voice.
You're my best friend. Please don't stay mad at me or lock me up as punishment. Remember, I'm probably going to live 10 to 15 years, so take care of me when I get old.
One day you'll need someone to take care of you, too.
A message from the Montgomery County Humane Society. Visit www.mchumane.org for the complete rules to love by.
Be your best friend for life.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Charlie Dean. He is currently the Director of Business Development for the Unmanned Systems Group of a company called Kinetic North America. It is a high-technology firm that is bringing extraordinary skill sets and technology to bear on behalf of our men and women in uniform. Specifically, we've been impressed by a program called Dragon Runner 10, a small, ultra-lightweight robot that has been used in Afghanistan and I believe elsewhere, combat-tested and quite impressive in terms of its performance. Charlie Dean, your own performance is impressive as well. You served as a paratroop and infantry officer following graduation from West Point and also serving as a professor at West Point. So you bring a lot of skill sets to bear. Tell us a bit about the company and then about this remarkable robot.
Frank, thank you very much for inviting us to be on your show today. Kinetic North America is a world leader in developing many products, to include, in this case, unmanned ground vehicles. We have had our robots in the fight since Bosnia in the late 1990s at the World Trade Center on 9/11 and 2 months thereafter, 24/7, at Fukushima. Our robots have been used to defeat over 20,000 enemy IEDs in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Improvised explosive devices, of course.
Absolutely. In front of not only U.S. forces, but also our coalition allies use our products in the fight. Today, that's been over 200,000 combat missions where our robots have been used against these IEDs.
Give us a sense of the state of the art, if you would, Charlie. I think for most of us, we think of R2-D2 or something like that when we think of robots. An ultralight robot that has the performance to go out and examine and disarm an IED looks like what, and how heavy is it? What kind of capabilities does it actually provide?
So the Dragon Runner 10 is the newest member of our family, and as you mentioned, Frank, early in your introductions, it is in combat today with U.S. forces. If you had a Dragon Runner 10 on your desk, you would see a tan robot with two tracks on it, one on the left side, one on the right side, about the size of a shoebox. And it has camera systems on the nose and on the back side of the robot, so you can see forward, you can see back, and the cameras can tilt up and down so you can see above you and below you. The robot can be thrown. It weighs 10 pounds, which is light enough to allow for an easy trajectory up and over walls or up in the second floor windows or top of stairs, over natural obstacles to one's front. And it can land either right side up or upside down. It doesn't care, and its radios immediately flip if it finds itself upside down. So to the user who has a small controller on his back and a small screen held in his hand to his front, he doesn't know that the robot temporarily found itself upside down because the cameras just flip. So you can drive this robot daytime, nighttime, light, dark conditions, cold and hot conditions, to provide early warning ahead of your small unit so you can see what's down the street, around the corner, under the roadway, perhaps if you're going through a tunnel under a road, to see what's down there. And then what's very unique about the Dragon Runner 10, makes it one of a kind really in the world right now, is that in just a matter of a couple seconds, you can attach an arm on one surface, the top surface of the Dragon Runner 10. The arm clips right on. And now with this arm attached to 5 seconds earlier was a reconnaissance robot, you now have a counter IED robot. So not only can you use the cameras to see the IED, but you can now use the arm and the gripper, the little hand on the end of the arm, to pull away perhaps camouflage that's hiding the IED, which may be trash or something like that, expose the IED and its wires, either attack the wires to try to disconnect the initiator from the main explosive element, or to deliver a countercharge to put down beside the enemy IED, back the robot off, and at a time of our units choosing, when there are civilians out of the way and the friendly forces out of the way, we detonate the IED. As opposed to at a time of the enemy's choosing.
Yeah. Charlie Dean is our guest. He is the Director of Business Development for the Unmanned Systems Group of Kinetic North America. And Charlie, you've served in both Afghanistan and Iraq in combat. You saw firsthand a lot of this kind of, threat environment. You also, I'm sure, saw the Hurt Locker, which brought it home to many of us stateside, what our troops were experiencing, what they were being subjected to. This IED threat is obviously a tremendously debilitating one. To the extent, as you indicated, those numbers are extraordinary. 20,000 of these IEDs neutralized with your systems. It is fair to say that saved an awful lot of our servicemen and women's lives, I have to say.
Yeah, we're very proud that the service members are choosing to send robots out first in many, many, many instances today, where when the robotic systems didn't exist a decade ago, or when there isn't a robot available today, the human still has to approach these IEDs and try to manually destroy them. And it is so rewarding every time a robot is used, because the humans remain hundreds of meters away in safe locations.
Give us a sense, because I imagine that the challenge whenever you're using relatively small and presumably fairly complicated pieces of equipment, that reliability is an issue. How big a problem is that for the troops that are in the field, particularly where they have, thanks to the design of this Dragon Runner 10, the ability to reconfigure them in the fight, in the battle space?
Reliability is a paramount topic for such platforms that, similar to a weapon, that separate the human from the dangers. You want to make sure that the piece of equipment does not let down the user at the time when they most need it, or any time, as a matter of fact. So we go to great extents to make sure that our platforms can withstand the rough living environments that they are subjected to. The users are very hard on them, and the environments are very hard on them. So in the end, you want sand, mud, cold, hot, just rough terrain abuse. Sometimes they're driven over. Sometimes they're thrown into against hard surfaces and things. So they have to withstand a very hard life, and yet, in the end, perform. And so we take that very seriously, and we take it into the whole design process. We certainly take it into our testing process. The military then tests the heck out of these systems to make sure they're happy with what they're buying. And then the ultimate tester is that end user who's using it in the face of the enemy. And as an example, our Talon robots, we have close to 4,000 of them in the field right now, that did the majority of those counter-IED missions I described. The Talon's about a 100-pound robot. And the Talons are attacked by the enemy constantly. They will frequently get shot or get damaged from detonations. If the enemy can't get the human, they'll often go after the robot. And Talons, and this is a statistic we got from the U.S. military a couple years ago, on average a Talon will frequently be damaged by enemy fire or enemy action. The operator will frequently repair the scars and the scrapes, but when serious damage occurs, the Talons and other robots go back to robot hospitals that are in theater. On average, a Talon goes in for major surgery 13 times in its lifespan. So they go on hundreds and hundreds of missions, thousands of missions each. They get damaged by the enemy periodically. They get major damage from the enemy.
But they keep on fighting.
And they keep on fighting because they go in for major surgery.
Charlie Dean, this is an extraordinary story. Unfortunately, we've got to wrap at this point. Just very quickly, the rough cost of a Dragon Runner 10?
We don't really talk costs because it all depends upon what the options are and the configuration and the radios and everything.
Suffice it to say, they're a lot cheaper than the lives of our troops, and they're saving them every day. We appreciate what you're doing at Kinetic, Charlie Dean, and thank you for your service to our country, both in uniform and now with a technology leader. I hope you'll keep us up to date as to the developments in this very important field in the future, and look forward to talking to you down the road.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.